Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion once again. So glad you could join us. Our subject today is mortals and immortals, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we welcome you all. We'll start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 82 of Collectania. God bless you. God keep your eyes open to the movement of evil so that your good will be effectual and not diluted. Every truth you promulgate, every good and ardent thought you entertain, though it exposes you to the aim of evil, makes you healthier, wealthier, wiser, and longer lived. The evidence of the senses to the contrary notwithstanding. Go on in this path, and your immortality is brought to light. May it be carried.
Beautiful, thank you. All right, the watching point, Karen.
Watch number 396. Watch that you realize each day that mortal man can never be depended upon. Could you depend on a puppet or marionette, every movement of which is controlled by the whim of the operator? Mortal man is a puppet with a mind that is human in belief and that is controlled by the consolidation of universal thought. His consciousness is subject at all times to being invaded, changed, and influenced mesmerically without his knowledge or consent. His desires may be inflamed or quenched, his impulses altered or reversed, his conclusions shaped unconsciously, and prejudices, envy, and hatred may be induced in him. All the while, he nurtures such suggestions as his own. His whole effort is to sell himself, not God, and yet his most intimate thoughts and desires cannot be depended on until he has learned through Christian Science how to protect his thinking and to relinquish the human mind for the divine. Through its very weakness, the individual human mind must yield to the will of the majority, all the while under the delusion that it is deciding weighty matters according to its own intelligence and judgment. A mortal's mind is like a lot where the public has been permitted to cross without restriction so long that by law it has become public property. Thus the owner loses all power to prevent anyone who will from tramping about on it and using it. In a pamphlet called Christian Science History, Mrs. Eddy once wrote as follows, indicating that mortal mind and its erroneous suggestions are totally unreliable. Quote, without a question, the student of Christian Science is not qualified to teach, preach, or practice divine metaphysics who knows not thoroughly how wisely and successfully to handle this heinous sin, mental malpractice. Without this understanding, he cannot separate the tares from the wheat and destroy the tares. He cannot divide between an impartation from the immortal or divine mind and the temptation or the evil suggestion of human thought and argument. But this must be done in order to obey the former and resist and destroy the latter. And not till it is done will he be protected and imbued with wisdom and power to rise superior to evil suggestions. This attainment is indispensable, whereby to establish a student on the scientific basis of Christian Science.
Wow. Very important watching point. Thank you, Karen. All right, comments?
Well, I love the part where it says a mortal's mind is like a lot where the public has been permitted to cross without restriction, so long that by law it has become public property. Oh, wow.
Right. That's a good description of it.
Really? It's okay, well, I've got some work to do.
It felt like a very...
Go ahead, Zeri.
I was going to say it felt like a very cleansing, very thorough, you know, way of looking at how we let go of the false sense of what we are, because we are only God's ideas. It really made me think about letting go of the false and knowing that there's only one mind, one God in control.
Thank you. That was good. Thank you, Zeri. Bruce?
Well, I also was impressed by that analogy of the lot where everybody's walking on it and it feels like they have the right and free course to do so. It raises the question, who owns you? And I hope this is something we can all take and devote ourselves more closely to Almighty God. He's the one and only who owns each and every one of us, not by public opinion. And like it said, if you gather in the public opinion too well, you think it's your own, but the outcome is envy and hate. And it does not have to be. The time for thinkers has come. Please, don't just take things in indiscriminately. Let's question, is it right or is it not right? You have the capacity to think and think correctly. Everyone has a conscience. It needs to be exercised.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, I also like this.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I like how he says his most intimate thought and desires cannot be depended on. You know, and that reminded me too. It's like these thoughts that occur to us aren't, you know, oftentimes aren't our thoughts. It's the stuff that we let come marauding across our, you know, the landscape of our consciousness. So we have to learn to distinguish and, you know, and obviously like Mrs. Eddy says, you know, stand porter at the door of thought.
Thank you. Who else is trying to?
Well, I was just going to say that that's why we wake up in the morning, first thoughts. And one of the first things I heard when coming here was, don't get out of bed until you know that there's only, that God is the only mind, that is your mind. And that's, I've done that ever since I heard that 5 or 6 years ago. But that's why, you know, we have to protect from the moment we're conscious in the morning, that is our only mind, and stay with it all day long.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Seth Florence?
That's why the treatment for every day is so important, where she emphasizes that we must accept the fact that God is our mind, God is the only mind, and there we stay. Also, the question of mortal or immortal, it really is a big one, and I don't know at what age is best to introduce that so that we know that we are immortal. Because unless we accept that we are immortal, here we are, we have a spirit father, infinite, and yet we are saying we are mortal up until when we learn. I just not learned it not too long ago, as you know, I really got into studying Christian Science, to know that you are immortal and therefore incapable. When she talks about incapability of sickness, sin, and disease, she's talking about the immortal man. But up until we know it, we are, you know, celebrate birthdays, oh, I'm this age, I'm that age, and so on for so long until, you know, we finally have to see what we really are, because we are the children of God. We are the reflection of His infinite mind, infinite spirit.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, yes.
Also, yeah, on page 242 in Miscellany, that paragraph, or Mrs. Eddy's reply to that person who wrote in. And she says that unless you, Christian Science is absolute, it is neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing towards it. It is at this point and must be practiced therefrom. unless you fully perceive that you are the child of God, hence perfect, which says immortal, you have no principle to demonstrate and no rule for its demonstration. I've pretty much memorized that whole paragraph.
Yeah. Is that the one from the Dorothy Rickey article, the quote?
Yeah,
yeah, I think
yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's the one she bases that, yes.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little more. Both Herbert and Dorothy Rickey wrote Association Dresses on Immortality, and they're very, very good. Lawrence, are you speaking?
No, it's the Rickey article on immortality. It just makes it so clear how mortality is subject to all the troubles we have. And immortality means without these things.
Thank you. And remember, this is very important. They're not two of you, because I used to think that, a mortal who is striving to be an immortal. There is only one. You are an immortal now. Only one, and you must claim that. That's in the Dorothy Rickey says, say it all the time to yourself in the morning, hundreds of times. I'm an immortal. I'm not a mortal living in this mortal dream. I'm an immortal, a child of God. You know, whatever work you're doing, that you're doing it for God. It's a very beautiful, liberating thought. Whether you're a housewife or a businessman or what teacher, whatever you're doing, declaring your immortality as you do it. And you'll find
that was like a walk last night.
Yes. Yes. That's right. The 3 levens of truth working in our world. But this is as we work it and know it, spiritualizing thought. So the world, it would seem, is a state of mesmeric thinking. And that's why, as Christian Scientists, as we've just said, you wake up knowing God is your mind. God is mine. God is my mind. God is the only pure and perfect mind, and stay with it all day. Otherwise, you will be sucked into that Adam dream. It was particularly aggressive during the pandemic, because it was droning out all the time. You know, how sick everyone is, how sick you're going to be, you're going to die. All of this stuff going on and on. And believe me, it wasn't just some random thing that was going on. This was happening for a reason, to get, and this is the malicious side of the malpractice. Those who want power, those who want control, whoever they are, and it's always animal magnetism. It's never person, place, or thing. And it only rises up when we are not doing our work the way we should. Otherwise, it can't, because truly it is nothing. But if we're asleep, then we seem to be drawn into it.
It will appear to be something, and it will appear to overtake you, your thought, and it will lead you down a rabbit hole. Yeah. So don't go there.
Yeah. Do not go there. If it's not a thought from God that loves you, don't accept it. Stan Porter, the door of thought. And Mrs. Eddy, she knew these times were coming. And thank God she gave us the science. But, you know, how many truly are using it and working with it? Even those who claim to be Christian Scientists. This is a way of life. It's a dedication. It's 24/7. And the fruits of it are incredible. But so, and it's interesting, the end of that, you know, where she says about that no one is qualified to teach, preach, or practice divine metaphysics who knows not thoroughly how wisely and successfully to handle this heinous sin, mental malpractice. That's a big deal. That's why in many ways I was grateful for the law case and all that what it put us under the gun like that, because we had to learn this. Either, you know, save Lord or I perish.
And that is how we learned. Thank God for Reg Carey, who showed up frequently, because he knew what was going on in Boston. He was the head of security up there, and he knew everyone very, very well. And he was so encouraging at times when we needed encouragement. And that was when we learned that the board of directors did not know how to practice Christian Science. They just did not know how. And that was a revelation to us. And once that sunk in, then we knew what we were in for. And we were able to do what we needed to do to be free from that mesmerism. And that is the only reason why we were able to survive and thrive.
That was 10 years, correct? Am I correct about that?
What?
The law case?
It extended for about 10 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It finally came to a conclusion in 1987.
Okay.
The final conclusion.
Right, because it had to go through three courts.
Yeah, right.
First the state court, then the appellate court, and then the state Supreme Court, which ruled in our favor.
But whatever trial, because many of you, you know, you didn't have this experience, but you've had other trials. And if you use them to your benefit to get where you are watching your thinking diligently, then you will come up the same way. It'll be a tremendous growing experience as long as the lesson says, and I love the end of the lesson in Science and Health, when the illusion of sickness or sin tempts you, cling steadfastly to God and his idea. Cling steadfastly, firmly, with constancy of mind. Allow nothing but his likeness to abide in your thought. Let neither fear nor doubt overshadow your clear sense and calm trust that the recognition of life harmonious, as life eternally is, can destroy any painful sense of or belief in that which life is not. Let Christian Science, instead of corporeal sense, support your understanding of being, and this understanding will supplant error with truth, replace mortality with immortality, and silence discord with harmony. She gives a direct outline as to what to do. The point is, are you doing it? And those words, supplant, to supplant error with truth. Supplant is to overthrow. So you're overthrowing error with what you know of truth. That's why when ERA starts talking, you can write down what it's saying, because writing it down makes it look ridiculous, okay? You write it down and you say, wow, what a load of garbage that is. And then on the other side, you write, what does God say? And then to replace mortality with immortality, replace, to put again in its former place. To go back, you were always an immortal. You were never born into matter. You will never die out of it. So you're going to find out who you are, have been, always, immortal. And then finally, to silence the discord with harmony. Silence. Cessation of rage. To cease firing. To put an end to. And sometimes when you're under discord, it does seem like it's raging or firing at you. So She uses her words carefully. This is a powerful statement to help you under any circumstance, sickness or sin.
And this is not a peaceful or calm process. Okay, this is warfare. And a lot of people just don't have the stomach for it, unfortunately. But you have to. You have to be willing to look something really fierce in the eye and yell at it with the truth until it backs down, because it will always back down, because it's like, you know, it appears to be something when it is really nothing. And that is the point. Keep trying. Keep Sticking to the truth. Don't try to do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Keep doing it.
I think though, if you think that you're doing it, it's impossible. It's just impossible. If you think that you're doing it. But this is why I feel that the instruction to feel that we are one with God, this oneness with God, always at one with Him. God is with me. God loves me. This ingrained in our thinking makes it possible that, no, I'm here with a power for the only power, really. Right? Therefore, I can say you are nothing and mean it. But I found that I couldn't do it by myself. No.
No, and that truth will eradicate the error. And that's mm-hmm. the truth that you have to stick with, because that's your only weapon.
Yeah, no, if you think you can do it yourself, you're schloomed. And that's the humility that comes in to let God work. And he says he's made man capable of this, and nothing can stop this power that he's made you capable of. So, and why we're one with the Father when we know it, so we can meet any claim. But yes, it's his power. As the Watching Point also said last night, I can of mine own self do nothing. We are totally incapable of doing any of this on our own. It's only through the power of God.
The confidence and capacity to do your part comes from the understanding that error has no substance. It has no principle or foundation to stand on, regardless of its appearance. If it's wrong, it's wrong and will fall by its own weight.
Yes. And that's why, too, you know, make sure if you know, the watching of TV or any of those things, that's often just mesmerism. Your phone, I mean, they're having a field day now with AI, broadcasting all kinds of things, many of which are lies. And then people take it in and think they know what they're talking about. And that's what this Watching Point is saying. And they don't know. They're just repeating mortal mind lies. So how do you, where she says, how to wisely and successfully to handle this heinous sin, mental malpractice, how do you wisely and successfully handle it?
Well, I want to speak from someone coming out of 40 years of Christian Science, and that it wasn't until they had all the teachings that they all provide here from the early workers. That's huge,
yes,
especially
huge.
Carpenter.
Yes.
And his 500 watching points.
Yes.
Just helps you understand it, because the teaching that you get outside of it is nothing compared to that.
Yes.
And I went to the top teacher, blah, 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 of Christian Science and the movement. And we got all the words, and I could see the same words, but it's not the same.
It was the blind leading the blind into the ditch.
Yeah.
Well, it's what I've also said many times. It's like for those of us who grew up in Christian Science or the other Christian Science, like learning the wrong grammar of a language. So we think
right.
we speak the language,
right.
we have the right accent,
yes.
but we don't speak it. And when we really look at it, we have to really always watch our thought, because we've had these smooth grooves that we've grown into.
Yes.
So that's so much. So I'm very grateful that I can be on this call right now. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good
yes.
point. Thank you, Zari.
I've been getting
yes.
sandpaper out.
Yes. You think you know it, and all of us mm-hmm. who were in the organization, we weren't taught it properly. And that's the reason our church exists. And yes, all these wonderful early workers that have come to our aid, Martha Wilcox, Carpenter, Kimball, Eustace, thank God they're like angels standing
yes.
with us. Great companions such as these. My God, I am so grateful every day for them. And it's just like Jesus's disciples, these people, or Mary Baker Eddy's disciples. Go ahead.
Mary, I just read, I had just finished chapter 8 in the recording, chapter 8, and I read this small little two sentences that just really, as we're talking, it just hit me, this little paragraph from this, the Forever Leader. Mr. Kimball was, Eustace was taught by Mr. Kimball. And he says, I remember Mr. Kimball brought a message to the class directly from Mrs. Eddy. The message was that the only excuse for holding any class was to show how evil was to be handled quietly without publishing it broadcast. That was the one purpose. It was not for anything else.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, and so many people who have had this class teaching say they have no idea how to handle the animal magnetism. They don't know what it is or how to handle it. And of course,
yeah.
The ultimate answer is it's nothing because it's not of God. That's how you handle it. But you have to know it and prove it. And that's different from just saying the words. If you're saying the words and shaking in your boots, you've got to get where you know you feel the power and omnipotence and omnipresence and omniscience mm-hmm. of God.
Hey, these aren't magic spells. Not enough to say the words.
No, that's right. Not magic spells.
I'm reading about Mrs. Eddy, too, in her biographies, which they bring out Mrs. Eddy so clearly here at the church. That's
Thank
huge.
You. Thank you.
Yeah.
There was something. Anyone else? Speaking.
Yeah, I was going to say something, Mary. You asked earlier, like, how do we separate or how do we go about, defeating this? I think for me, in my experience, as I came here and learned what real Christian Science was, then I had to stand on it. And that's the only way I've grown is by standing. You talk about being the warfare, it was you or Gary, but the only time you really can engage in that is when you feel like you're under attack or something's come to you. And that's when you stand. I mean, that's when it's really required of you, you're kind of in the thick of it.
Thank you.
I kind of think of that as like the atonement, it's like you're being tempted in a way. And it's during the fire is when you can actually stand, and that's all you can rely on. When that clears away, now I felt like that's when I've grown, and that's how I've been able to separate, good from bad or left from right. But it's only when I'm in that situation that I really feel it.
Yes, and it goes back to the statement by Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health about silencing discord with harmony. Silence, when you're under that fire, what can silence it? But the truth of Christian Science and the Bible, all of that will silence it. It will wipe it out and it will cease firing. It will put an end to, and it will be the cessation of the rage, because it does seem like a raging thing going on. Lawrence?
Yes, that is true. But also the standing, the ability to stand is because you're so in yourself. You know this connection so strongly that you can stand. I am, the truth is here, is standing, and the error has no place here at all.
Thank you. Yes, this place has changed hands. no way to get to you anymore. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And it can't talk to you anymore. It's over. It's done. The bullets have ceased. So, and in doing that, you maintain your immortality. Now, Linda was talking about reading Mrs. Eddy's biographies, how important that is. And yes, it was Carrie that sent me this Herbert Reiki association addresses. But he speaks to this, and I think very beautifully. And he's the one, he says, we ought to read one biography of Mrs. Eddy each year. There are 6 authorized volumes, Sybil Wilbur's, Powell's, Ramsey's, Julia Johnston's, Tomlinson's, and Mrs. Eddy's own autobiography in retrospection and introspection. And of course, we add to that Carpenter's. There's others that we've added to that, but certainly Carpenter. So he says, the next time you read one of these biographies, be right there throughout the story. It will then mean much more to you. Be a companion in Mrs. Eddy's mental household. Ride in her carriage with her and see the things she saw. Speak to those she spoke to. Sit with her on the red rock while the poem or waiting harp strings unfolds. Attend her last class in 1898. You know you almost can, for many things have been written about that class, both in her biographies and recent articles in the journal. It is not necessary for you to be excluded from anything good that happened in the spiritual unfoldments of our leader. I think that's so beautiful. I mean, that's the wonder of books. You know, why not be there with her? Make it real.
We're supposed to know her through her works.
Yes.
And he wrote this back probably in the 30s or 40s. So he's talking about journals in that time, not current.
Correct. Thank you. Yes.
And we give a whole list of good books to read. I would not read all that are out there.
That's correct, too. We have it on our website, the ones to read. You must be very careful what you read about her. Again, it would like to mesmerize you into making you think that things are true about her that are downright lies. And of always and utmost importance, we see her as the woman in the apocalypse. And any biography that doesn't, don't read it.
That's also true of when you, I realized when I read Gillian Gill that it did not give me the feeling of the, let's say, the music of Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, there are those, you know, they humanize her, I say. And the Robert Peel's books humanized her. It's one great thing with Paul Smiley. He brings it out how he, you know, he has innuendos about her, things that make you question, perhaps. He was not in the right mind. He thought he was an intellectual scholar. And to that we say,
and in addition to that, there's an element of disrespect.
Yes.
And that I find totally offensive. An offense against God.
Thank you. And again, he was handled. He didn't. He was just overcome with the wrong mind.
I think of Christ Jesus saying, "If I be lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men unto me." And I think about like if you're reading or writing something about our way showers and it's pulling them down, then you're pulling everyone else down with them, and. For what purpose, you know?
Yeah.
Mrs. Eddy and Christ Jesus did so much good for everyone. They should be lifted up and they should be seen correctly.
Yes. And really, those in present day who speak out against her, and this is a warning, and this isn't me, this is biblical, do mine anointed no harm. They better not. They better not. And if anyone knows of anybody who knows of anybody who knows of anybody, because I know people who are, really warn them. If you don't like the teachings or whatever, let there be no strife with my brethren and thine brethren. Go your own way. But to speak out against her is worse than foolishness.
Lake of fire.
Yes. And also, you don't know what you're talking about. You have been misled, misguided.
Maybe hurt,
maybe had these bad experiences or whatever, but it was not the true understanding of the science or of Mrs. Eddy. And work harder to get it rather than lash out. It's a sad situation that these things happen to people, but it's not the science and it's not Mrs. Eddy. It's other things. Just perhaps what this watching point was talking about. The malpractice comes into your thought. You think it's your own thought, but it's not.
I liken it to being unable to balance your checkbook and then being mad at all of math for it.
That's a good
thank you. Yes. So, I also wanted to share a couple of things from Herbert Ricci that he speaks about on immortality. And he says, don't be a mortal living in a state of mortality. be an immortal living in this glorious state of immortality, enjoying everything immortal, beautiful, good, and true. Live in that eternal mind that knows no beginning and no end, no birth and no death. Live in that perfect life that exists through all time. It is eternity itself. In no other way can you demonstrate the infinite capacities of healing in Christian Science. And then, reading the Bible intelligently with a true imagination and with a sincere desire for all of the spiritual interpretation, inspiration, and lessons to be learned therefrom will extend your atmosphere of thought. You will learn to see yourself not as a mortal living a few decades in the 21st century, but as an immortal living in an eternal universe with every idea that is beautiful, good, and true. Such a correct, spiritual, eternal, immortal sense of things will eliminate from your thought any fear of death, yea, every belief in death and the accompanying experience of sin and sickness. Truly, be a priest after the order of Melchizedek, without father or mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God. That is so beautiful too. And again, you know, the assignment to read the Bible, some people say, oh, I don't like the Bible so much. It has all this negative stuff in it. Well, the spiritual interpretation of it, you have to dig deeper. That's why sometimes to read commentaries, it's why we have our Bible study. It's certainly why we read Science and Health with the key to what?
The scriptures.
Mm-hmm. And prose works too, because if you understand it all, it's incredible, but it's like a parts of it are book are written in kind of a mystery sort of a form. So you can figure it out. It's fascinating, like Revelation.
Yeah, it's like a form of encryption that it takes spiritual sense to decode.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
It is.
Mm-hmm. But it's a history of the thought of mankind over time. And there's a thread throughout it that if you've got your spiritual sense working, you'll feel that thread working through the whole Old Testament and New Testament. It's just a lot more clear in the New Testament than in the Old Testament, but it's there.
And this is also why there are so many editions of the Science and Health, because the first 1875 edition, she just put it all out there, but she also realized that people were not ready to understand that, which is that thread that you're discussing.
Well, she refined it so that it was easier. Yeah. For people to get it.
Nobody needs to rewrite it.
No, because some people, yes. No, her first edition was very raw. I call it raw. And if you're, a lot of people love it because she's just very blunt.
It was incredibly helpful to me. It wasn't until I started reading the first edition that I began to understand the 1910 edition.
Well,
same with me.
But interesting. Well, Gary's just finishing now the audio of it.
Yes.
So some of it's online though, right?
Oh yeah.
No, good.
7 chapters.
Yeah. So, and also this was, I think Karen submitted this the last time we had the lesson on mortals and immortals. It was Dorothy Reiki speaking about it, which is also a wonderful article to read, Immortality Brought to Light, which is on our website, right? And she talks about how we should, and I said it earlier, that's first waking thought in the morning and the last at night. Mm-hmm. One of affirmation and a rejoicing that we are immortal 100 times a day. Let us tune in on the infinite and thank our Heavenly Father that we are His immortal children. Rejoice that you are not a mortal housewife washing windows, polishing doors. How wonderful that you are the immortal daughter of the King, living in God's house, serving with gladness, and reflecting all his qualities to the fullness. Now, it goes on, but make sure whatever home you live in, you see it as God's home, and you rejoice in it and make it beautiful. We have read about that, and I've kind of gotten behind on that. It was another thing that Carrie had sent me, which was about Mrs. Eddy, and it was an article written by Annie Knott. And I don't know kind of where I left off. But anyway, one of them is Mrs. Eddy on books. A student once asked Mrs. Eddy in class respecting some book. She paused a moment and then said thoughtfully that we must test books and people by their influence over us, and that as results might not appear at once, great care was needed in the choice of both books and friends. One at least of those present began to apply the test, then given to Mrs. Eddy herself and to her writings, the result being that their entire influence has been felt as ceaseless stimulus in the line of spiritual endeavor and of worthy attainment in everything undertaken. And this would assuredly be the verdict of the unnumbered thousands who know this wonderful woman personally and through her teachings. It is this which crowns her life today, a noble purpose grandly realized, the vision dear, the heights nearer, and to her apply Whittier's words, beyond a narrow bounded age stretches thy prophet heritage. Through heaven's dim spaces angels trod, through arches round the throne of God, the audience whirls, all time to be the witness of the truth in thee. So she's saying, you know, the books, the influence of the books, sometimes you might not be able to tell right away, but science and health, look what that's done for yourself, for the ages, and it continues to do, spiritualizing the world. That's why our reading of it, our making of the audios of it, it goes out and out and out, a ripple effect to bless all mankind.
The leaven,
yes. This was spoken of last night. Mm-hmm. So all these things are very important. And as I've said, to shape your day, to read the biographies of Mrs. Eddy, shape your day as much as you can on how she lived her life, how she lived her day. What better model or example could any of us have other than the Master, Christ Jesus? Yes. Did you want to say anything, Florence?
No, not right now. No.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to switch over. Not that I don't have a lot more to say on, but I'm going to switch over because we have a new virtue medicine. So, and as we've talked about, well, there's been a series of newspaper articles called Virtual Medicine, and the list so far gets longer: gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, admiration, and reverence, honesty, joy, and laughter, generosity, charity, love, optimism, hope, healing of resentment, beauty, humility, patience, silence, resilience. And the last is this one today, is kindness. And I feel it relates to in miscellaneous writings where Mrs. Eddy says, God's preparation of the sick are potions of his own qualities. That whole list of things I just said were God's qualities. As we live these qualities, they have healing benefits on your body. They heal and bless. And the definition of virtue is strength, moral goodness, the practice of moral duties, and the abstaining from vice. Practice of moral duties from a sincere love of God and his laws. Virtue is nothing but voluntary obedience to the truth. So in this newspaper article about kindness, and I mean, these are somewhat related to medical in a way. I mean, they're running tests. They're running tests on people. And people, you know, dividing people in groups, and those people who did deeds of kindness, guess what?
Healthier.
Healthier and happier. Yes.
Live longer.
Live longer. And according to this, it even changes your DNA. How about that?
Oh, wow. No.
How about that? So, anyway, there's a story. I thought this was pretty a beautiful story about a famous parable tells of how a storm left thousands of dying starfish stranded on the beach. A man watched as crowds gathered but did nothing. Then a child began picking up the starfish one by one, throwing them back into the sea. "Son," the man said, "you don't realize there are miles and miles of beach and hundreds of starfish. You can't make a difference." The child smiled, picked up another starfish, threw it into the ocean, and replied, "I made a difference to that one." The man was moved. He joined in. Then one by one, the whole crowd joined in. As data suggests, single acts of kindness may spread farther than you might think. And think about it. You know, if you ever hear of an act of kindness, it makes you want to do it too, right? Rather than all this other stuff.
Yeah, there's a saying online that it restores your faith in humanity when you see it.
Yes. Yeah. Kindness is incredible, and it's very different from niceness. Niceness isn't kindness. Kindness mm-hmm. is doing something with no thought of return. Mm-hmm. It's doing something because you're empathetic toward the person. Your heart goes out, mm-hmm. and it has great benefit.
You're doing it because it's right.
Right.
It's a right thing to do. Yeah, it says, naturally, kindness cultivates happiness. In a 2019 study published by the Journal of Social Psychology, researchers found that people who performed kind acts every day for 7 days experienced a significant increase in happiness. Interestingly, mm-hmm. whether people were kind to their family or to strangers, the more kind deeds they did or observed, the happier they were. And then furthermore, kindness affects more than emotions, it influences one's DNA and shapes how the immune system works.
Still kindness can be done, but if it's done selfishly, it's self-righteousness.
Thank you. Good point. Yes.
Yeah. If it's done selfishly, it's not kindness.
No. Since I've moved to Sun City, which is a retirement community, there's several people on my street that are widows, and I've found myself helping each of them in different ways, and they've been so grateful. And I was talking to my friend yesterday and telling her that this is the happiest I've ever been. And when I sat and thought about my happiness and what it was coming from was just helping all these people and how happy it makes them, it makes me happy.
Isn't that wonderful?
Would be a good testimony.
Yeah, that would be a good testimony.
Yeah, and it's interesting because no matter where you are or what you do, there are always opportunities to be kind. I mean, none of us...
Love is reflected in love.
Love is reflected in love. So, and this adds to your immortality. Now, I don't know, I have many beautiful things from Carrie, but I think I'm going to end on this. This was the love of Jesus on the Calvary. He was the epitome of love, right? I'm way surpassing just kindness. So this is from an old 1886 journal, and it's by an A. Lang. Oh, okay.
Okay. A. Lang writes, "Let us consider love as expressed in the only begotten of the Father, Jesus the Christ, who took upon himself flesh, whereby to manifest himself to the world, that whosoever believeth on him might not perish, but have everlasting life. God so loved the world that he gave to us Jesus, who toiled among men, was despised and rejected, became poor, that we might be made rich in life, love, and truth, was reviled, but reviled not again, suffered himself to be betrayed into the hands of his enemies, was brought before Pontius Pilate as a lamb dumb before his shearers, yet opened he not his mouth, was crucified between two thieves, all in obedience to that mighty law of love. Had love been other than divine, no such history could ever have been written. There never was, nor ever will be on earth, such a demonstration of it as was that of Jesus on Calvary. Well may we sing of his mighty love. If we are enraptured by the little foretaste of love which we are privileged to enjoy here in our finite state, what will it be when we shall come to enjoy its full fruition in heaven, when mortality shall be overcome of life, and we shall know as we are known? That will be love without alloy, dissimulation, or discord. There, harmony and love will ever blend. So also will every other term by which God is expressed. Love, O precious love, may it be forever our conscious possession. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.